Hello and welcome again to another episode of Wheel It. I'm Carl.
And I'm Lammy.
Today, in fact, before I get into what we're saying or talking about today, we must apologise for, I guess, the time it's taken to put this episode out. In the last week or two, it's been really busy for the both of us.
We're really trying, guys, with this whole consistency thing.
Really trying.
It's all in good measure because obviously we've had some great news.
Exactly. If any of you guys follow me, you probably would have seen the news I've had, which is really good. So my mind hasn't really been on podcasting for the last week or so, to be fair, justifiably. But we're back now. We're here, ready to give you a great ep. With that being said, today is the first installment in our Artist Spotlight series. So what we do in the Artist Spotlights, we're going to have this, you know, one every series, is we're going to go into a specific artist, deep dive into them, kind of, you know, how we found out about them, you know, the songs we like about them, what albums we like, so on and so forth. Just have a chat about our standout artist. And this week,
we're going to reveal who we're talking about this week, but before that we have to like deal with On Spin and everything.
Okay.
What have you been listening to, Carl?
What have I been listening to? I've been listening to, do you know what, before I even get into my On Spin, what I've been listening to is I've been listening to the Schoolboy Q album, actually. That drops, I think, on Friday. It's called Crash Talk. Now I'm a big fan of Schoolboy Q, and although this album was good, I don't think it was as good as his last two projects.
Okay.
Specifically Blank Face. And what this album made me do is actually, it made me go back to Habits and Contradictions, Oxymoron, and Blank Face, and kind of like rank them personally because I'm such a fan of his. And it didn't, I realized, you know, 3 years later that Blank Face was actually his best album. And this album doesn't necessarily stack up to that.
Would you say that's in his whole discography?
In his whole discography, this is not the highest, not two, not one, probably three. Probably okay. Above Habits, if that. The reason being is because I kind of expected it to be a bit more personal. Many may not know that he actually went through like stages of depression when he was away. So it's been 3 years since his last album. And between now and then, he's kind of gone through a lot of stuff. And I guess it's selfish as a fan to kind of expect or want from an artist to kind of talk about that. But I often think that, you know, when you go through an ordeal, it's almost like healing when you're able to kind of put it into your music. It seems that way anyway for artists. So I wanted him to go into that a bit more, but it seemed like he did go into it a little bit, but it didn't seem like he wanted to really talk about it. But that being said, it was still typically Schoolboy Q, and there was still a couple of joints on there that I really liked.
He doesn't seem the kind of artist to really let on his personal life, to be fair.
I mean, he shows it in flashes throughout all of his albums. He's always done it in flashes, like it's on a song rather than through a whole album. It's just on one particular song. And I guess on this album, a particular song that stood out to me, was actually one of my favourite ones, is the last one. I think it's called Attention, where he kind of like details his past life of, you know, when he was gangbanging and then he was at a store and there was a shootout and he was with his daughter and how he escaped the shootout, like that kind of stuff. I really enjoyed. But apart from that, it was semi-introspective and semi-hard shit. I don't know how else to describe it, just hard music, which is cool, but it wasn't always for me. Did you listen to the album?
No, and for me, Schoolboy Q is one of those TDE artists that I'm not too sure about. I'm kind of in two minds about. It's
really?
Like, I appreciate his style and his substance, but he's not an artist that I would go to listen to, you know. But with that being said, I really did, like, in the beginning stages of getting to know TDE, I really did enjoy Oxymoron. I got into Blank Face quite well. And I felt like Blank Face was actually, yeah, I would agree with you in terms of one of his best outputs, because it was just a lot more experimental, at least the most experimental I've seen and heard from Schoolboy Q.
So, and he pulled it off as well. Like, yeah, musically, it was a really good album.
It went well. And I feel like that's some influence from A$AP Rocky, because that was at the time when they were like really, I wouldn't say collaborating like a lot, but just really like hanging out together a lot of the time. And everyone knows A$AP Rocky for that whole like experimental vibe and like always on the cutting edge of things.
You're a fan of Rocky?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. But in recent years, it's just like been going downhill. Like, I didn't even listen to testing.
I didn't either. But my boy said it was all right.
I looked at that and went, mm.
Yeah.
Moving on.
My boy said it was all right, but I never really gave it a chance, to be fair.
I feel like that album got the most air of...
Do you know what's mad? Do you know what's actually mad? So, Pusha T's Daytona came out the same day as ASAP Rocky's testing.
It did,
Upon Pusha T's, you know, dissed Drake and all that kind of uproar that happened and surrounded the album, ASAP Rocky actually outsold Pusha T on first week sales. So I think Pusha T had 77,000 and ASAP Rocky had 79,000 sales first week.
Wow.
I was like, hang on a minute. All this, you know, Drake beef and all of that didn't push it past ASAP Rocky.
What do you think caused that? I mean, I can't think of a theory immediately, but I think
ASAP's just got a cult following. Like, he's like one of those guys like Tyler, the Creator as well. Yeah. They're always going to do numbers, not numbers, serious numbers, but they've got a safety net of their fans who are loyal. Whatever they put out, their fans are going to listen to. Mm. They seem to have that cult following. Especially ASAP Rocky with girls as well, because they think he's really pretty and that.
Yeah,
they may not like his music, but they're just going to play it. Yeah, so he's got a cult following.
Yeah, music, like music first in all things. I feel like testing... I did listen to a couple tracks. There was a Frank Ocean feature, which I had to get into straight away.
Of course.
But even that, I wasn't too enthralled by it. I just thought, okay, you know.
Yeah.
So...
It was a throwaway track.
I probably didn't approach it in the best way. I just went on like a shuffle, random shuffle.
How
I was
can
like,
you listen to an album for the first
time? I know,
time
because,
shuffle?
Do you know, I think my...
Can't be trusted.
I didn't want to listen to it through as a whole. I just wanted to say, okay, let's see what you hit me with the first three songs, and then I'll decide if I want to give this a full listen.
An artist like Rocky, though, slightly, you don't need to listen to his album in like the intended order, because it's not like his album is conceptual or like it. I can't imagine it being sequenced really, really well. You probably could get away with it with bass.
I'm trying to think, has Rocky. He done any conceptual albums as
not
such?
Conceptual, but he's got a really good tape before his albums, and I always get the name mixed up. I think it's Live Love ASAP, and I think his album was Long Live ASAP. But it was the mixtape with Peso, with bass, all of them. It was heavily produced by Clams Casino.
Yeah, that was kind of conceptual in that he was using that whole Houston sound.
Yeah, the like purple drink.
Yeah.
That kind of chopped and screwed kind of. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I guess that's more thematic than
conceptual.
Conceptual.
Yeah.
But what's the latest one in that series? Is it Long Live ASAP?
Long Live. So it was Live Love and then Long Live ASAP. That was his debut album.
So the... The one after that, actually, I'm talking about. The one with LSD and...
And Pretty Flacco. The cover was his face, but...
distorted
Yams,
and everything.
Pigmentation on his face.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of that one, actually.
It's something ASAP, sure.
Whatever, man.
Yeah, I felt like that was...
I'm not
was,
the biggest ASAP fan, anyway.
That was conceptual, because it was more psychedelic, rock, LSD.
Oh, it had Rod Stewart on it as well, right? Is that the one that had Rod Stewart on it?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So fair play to Rocky.
Yeah.
But completely off the
ASAP aside.
ASAP aside, sorry. I think I enjoyed Crash Talk there. It wasn't a bad album or anything. But I had my favourites on it. I'm definitely gonna continue spinning it. Anything you've listened to in the last?
I, on the other hand, have not been listening to any new releases.
You're getting back to stuff then, or what have you been?
I just haven't been looking out for anything. I haven't been anticipating anything. I've been more in the music culture in terms of, I guess, what's happening behind the scenes and who's performing, that sort of thing. And, just looking at the state of things, like which artists are even worth listening to these days. But that's a whole another topic to discuss.
Yeah.
But, sure. Shall we get into your
On Spin? Okay. So this week, my On Spin isn't necessarily a song that's been released. Instead, it comes from the GOAT, the one and only. You should know who I'm talking about, Jay-Z. I think it was last week it was. Webster Hall in New York reopened and he had his B-Sides concert part two. For those who don't know, when I think it was the 25th anniversary of Reasonable Doubt, or was it the 20th anniversary? He did a B-Sides concert where he performed all of his kind of album cuts from Reasonable Doubt at Webster Hall. In between now and back then, it closed. And for its reopening, he kind of B-sides part two concert. And in this concert, he kind of had this monologue. I wouldn't even say it was a song or anything. It was almost like a speech where he kind of just was, you know, in rhythm, but he was kind of talking to us, addressing us almost as the godfather of hip-hop he is. So my on-spin comes from that. Now, I don't really want to say too much about it because I think the clip speaks for itself. Yeah, so you kind of just listen to it and take from it what you will, but listen to what he's saying. So yeah, it's my on spin.
Gentrify your own hood, but the people do it. Play eminent domain and have your people moving. That's a small glimpse into what Nipsey was doing. Anybody still confused as to what he was doing? The neighborhood designed to keep us trapped. They redlined it so property declines if you live by blacks. They depress the asset and take the property back. It's a ruthless but a genius plan in fact. So now we fighting over scraps. Crabs in the barrel, but crabs don't belong in the barrel. They ain't never tell us that. So in the barrel, we gon' act like we act. We can easily get out the barrel, we stand on each other's back. Whoever gets on top, as long as they stay attached, they can pull everybody out. I was doing just that. I told neighborhood nips to stay close. $100 million on your schedule, lay low. Tell your team to be on point in the places that they go. I never dreamed of getting killed in the place that he called home. How we gonna get in power, we kill the source. Y'all like to run off on the plug, so of course. That ain't lit, that's a means to an end. Me and my team was playing the plug ahead of plan. Sometimes we's only making $1,000 a joint. That ain't no money, but that ain't the point. So those 92 bricks was only 92 now. So y'all can close your mouth, it ain't nothing for y'all to wow. But it is something to study. We was chasing our goals, not chasing money. Niggas chasing hoes, we find that funny. I pull up in the rows, that hoe gon' want me. But I don't want no hoe, I want a wife. Somebody to bounce these ideas off at night. I be going to sleep hoping they visit me. That young king had a lot of jewels to split with me. And we ain't gotta leave the hood physically. But we gotta leave that shit mentally. Somehow, some way, we gotta make it up out the hood someday.
So for our very first artist spotlight, we've decided to go for a Nigerian artist who has taken the global stage, quite literally, in recent weeks or days or however long Coachella was. That gives it away straight away. But we are talking about Burna Boy this
African
week.
African giant.
So, why have we chosen Burna Boy, first of all? He's very culturally relevant at the moment. Of course, we all know that Afrobeats in recent years has like just taken flight and it's completely taken the world, which is a good thing culturally.
Yeah.
And Burna Boy is arguably one of the best artists to really take that genre and not only make it his own, but just take it to the world, quite literally. Yeah. So, we're getting into Burna Boy.
Cool.
How did you first come to learn about the enigma that is Burna Boy?
Enigma, I like that one. So, I have a very specific memory of when I first heard Burna Boy. And it may not have been his first song, but I remember I was actually in year 13, so this was, I think it was the summer before I was about to go into uni, right? Mm. And way back in the day, early secondary school times, I used to watch this show called 106 and Park, right? It was on BET. And I hadn't tuned in for years, and I think I had my cousin round, and he just tuned in on a whim, like just said, all right, let me just put this on. And then they had like a segment for like fresh new artists or whatever, and it was Burna Boy that came on at the time, and it was the song Tonight. And I remember him in his cream blazer, like, you know, with the video.
Yeah.
I heard it, I was like, who is this? Like, for one, I was already surprised that BET, I guess 106 and Park, was putting on an African artist.
Yeah, I had no idea that he would have been on such a platform at that early stage.
Very early. And the song that he was kind of, not performing, the song that they put on, I was like, this actually sounds really, really good. Like, it was like really mellow, really chill, but at the same time, like, I could because I think back then Afrobeats was all about kind of your up tempo. I think around them times, I think Pacarumo came out by Wizkid.
Yeah, it was just like
so heavy. That was the sound. That was the sound.
Beat, yeah.
Exactly. So for that, this to come out and it was like real smooth. But at the same time, I was hearing bits of Yoruba in there and like I was like, yo, who is this guy? I need to kind of get into him. So I guess that was, it was very vivid. But that was my first memory of Burna Boy and like who he was and the kind of music he made.
Yeah, I discovered him at exactly the same time. It was that gap in between year 13 and like first year of uni, and my first song that I heard was Like to Party.
Yeah, I think that was his first song, right?
Yeah. Well, we don't know if it was officially, but it was one of his first singles that really blew.
Yeah.
And so obviously that was what was played in all like the local raves and all of that.
Yeah.
And the video as well was quite cool.
Like a pool party,
like,
right?
A pool party kind of scene. And yeah, I thought this is such a vibe, and not only to hear like a really cool mix of like Yoruba, English, and then he's got that whole island vibe to him,
which
at the time, I don't know if, I didn't find it corny, which I thought I would have. Like, I could tell that it was really, really genuine from the onset.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, this is really cool. Like, he's not Wizkid, but he's very, like, he's got his own spin.
He's in his own lane completely. Yeah.
On the whole Afrobeat genre that I was only just really discovering at the time.
Yeah. I think that comes from the fact that, okay, he's an Afrobeats artist, but he spent a lot of time in the UK as well.
Yeah, so
I think what influenced him was, obviously being Nigerian and being African or whatever, he had that already in him. It was innate in him. Mm. But then spending time in, I think he lived in Peckham as well, so spending time in the hood, you all mingle with Caribbean, so you will hear a bit of patois, which he puts in his music. Like, you all kind of, you know, when you'll be able to rap in a certain way and kind of use certain flows, because that's what you hear in England as well.
Mm.
And I feel like that's what shines through in his music, and that's why it doesn't seem forced when he does maybe a Caribbean twist or like an accent. Like, if you task someone like, I don't want to mention names actually, if you task any other Afrobeats artist to kind of, it will sound very, very
heady. You know what? And it's funny because 90% of them try it and it just will not bang.
It doesn't bang at all. But yeah, so he does that really well. And I think that's because of kind of where he's kind of from and his upbringing and his background. I think Lights Party was the second song I heard by him.
Okay.
And obviously hearing the first song, I was like, this is really cool, really chill, like I can vibe to this. And then I heard Lights Party, which is a more kind of, it was a little bit more upbeat, but it was more of a kind of party kind of, and I was like, okay, this guy's actually cool. Like, he's got different elements to him. I saw that from early. Tonight actually hooked me, and then Lights Party made me realise, now he's actually kind of wavy.
Mm. It was a couple months after I first heard about, you know, Burna Boy, that, you know, very few artists, when I first hear about them, I'll look into their discography extensively, and if they've got lots of, you know, work already out there, I'll be like, great, something for me to really get into. But obviously Burna Boy was only just coming up on the scene at the time, so I saw his projects live, or LIFE.
I think that stands for Leaving an Impact for Eternity.
Mm.
Yeah.
And not much else was there to take in, so I thought, okay, this is great. And then literally, I remember from the first track, is it Run My Race?
No, it's not.
There's intro.
There's an intro, which is actually really good as well, by the way. Yeah.
In fact, regardless of the order of the tracks, I remember Run My Race being that one banger for
me. That's one of my favourite Burna Boy songs till now.
That beat.
I think it's probably one of the best produced Afrobeat songs.
Yes.
All now.
I think, will Tidal let us see who produced that? If the
artist actually put the credits in, then Tidal will let you know.
I don't know how to look credits up on Tidal properly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought that not only is this such a well-produced track, but he commands it so well, and like he just rides the whole like flow. Mm-hmm. It's just like perfect. So yeah, that was the track that really hooked me.
Yeah, that stood out for you. Hang on, let me see if I can get there. So,
but that whole project in general is stellar.
Really good. I was even going to go through it as well.
And it features Wizkid as well. What's it called again?
Jah Love Is True.
Yeah,
it's actually a really good song. I enjoyed the song.
Yeah.
Um, oftentimes when these kind of African, the Titans, like I'm saying, your Wizkid, your Davido's, your Burna Boy's, when they collaborate, it doesn't always kind of work out.
But this one really did. Like, I think they bounced off early, each other really
early doors. They weren't as blown as they are now, and that's why it really worked out. But going through the album,
I'd say Wizkid was fairly blown, but yeah.
Not as he is now, to be fair. He was big. He was big.
Not as he was now, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Wiz has been having bangers from early. But yeah, going through the album, from the top then, intro, My Life, something cool about this. I think his uncle was who narrated it. And fun fact, which we'll probably kind of get into at some point when we chat about his musical style, his uncle was actually Fela Kuti's manager. I think he was his tour manager.
Yeah, or road manager. And his mum was a dancer for Fela Kuti as well.
Yeah.
So from early, he's had that musical influence, which is really cool.
Exactly. And I think that, again, when we talk about kind of his musical style, that kind of plays a part. We'll get into that. But, you know, any tracks in particular, I guess, apart from Run My Race, that you were really feeling?
There was a track that I used to dance to a lot. Might in the privacy of my room. No, it was, I think it was... I used to dance to this album a lot, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Run My Race was definitely up there. My
favorite one till now. Tonight was up there as well. I really like Yawade. When we said, you know, he kind of can,
Yawade, I
he
think
can go into that Caribbean pocket, like,
yeah,
the guy was seriously flowing in the Caribbean pocket, and it was flawless. Like, he didn't stutter, like, he didn't, like, it sounded normal. And this was on his debut album as well, which really impressed me. I really like Yawade as well. What was it there? Liked Parties on there.
Yeah.
The song with Wizkid's on there, Ja Love Is True. There's about, you know, six or seven songs on it that are really, really good that even till now I would spin as well, and it holds a candle to the current Afrobeat crop as well. So I guess that was from his first album, L.I.F.E. You know, any other songs or, I guess, albums, you know, before now that you kind of were into or you listened to that you're feeling?
I guess before I even get into that, at that stage where we had both, like, first discovered him and we got into the Life project, did you ever anticipate that he would be one of the hugest... Is that hugest. Even a word?
No, it definitely isn't a word. Well, let's run with it.
One
hugest.
Of the biggest...
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
All of that.
One of the biggest Afrobeats artists, or even African artists, period. Did you have that foresight and think that would ever be...
No, case. And I'll tell you why, because I didn't even think Afrobeats would stay for as long as it has and grow while staying as well. I thought, okay, cool, it's here. Not a flash in the pan, but, like, maybe in 4 or 5 years' time, it wouldn't be as big. Like, it was like, you know, I almost saw it as a bit like, you know, how Funky House came in and went, how Garage came in and went, like, all these genres came and went. But it seems Afrobeats really, like, was here to stay, and it has been here to stay, and it's elevated, especially as it's not a genre that originates from England, right?
But yeah,
it's
been, or even Europe.
Or even, you know, Europe, but it's been such a presence over here. So I guess for that reason, I didn't think he would be, you know, at the top of his game at the moment and kind of be as worldwide and the giant he is. What about you? Do you expect it?
I'd say I had, like, a similar mindset as well. I wasn't entirely sure that Afrobeats was here to stay, and I wouldn't say a fan of the entire, like, genre and some of the artists I was hearing. Funny enough, at the time, Davido was also kind of up and coming. Yeah, that was really, like, raining in the clubs and everything. But people like Davido and, like, the rest of, I think, like, Kiss Daniel, all those other ones, like, I wasn't feeling it too much, but I always thought to myself that if we're going to look at the long run, I think Burna Boy and Wizkid will be here to stay. I'm not too sure about the others, but I knew those two would be here to stay, and I think that's exactly how it's really played out. Of course, like, Davido has blown as well in his own right, and he's doing great. But, yeah, I definitely saw Burna Boy as one of the distinguished artists from the genre.
And I kind of see why you would have thought that, because of all of the, I guess, the premier and the non-premier Afrobeat artists today, what stands Burna Boy apart is he's a musician. Like, he's very musical. Very intentional.
A lot of people don't get that, you know. I feel like he's... Yes, he makes bangers, but there's a certain musicality to it that that he has that no one else can touch.
That's, like, why he's my favourite.
I wouldn't even say
artist.
Not even Wizkid.
Of course. Do you know what Wizkid is good for? And Davido and the rest of them are good for. They got the streets a lot, but their music is almost 50% beat driven and 50% of what they're saying. Like, and I guess that's Afrobeats as a genre. Like, it's very much what's the beat saying. Like,
yeah.
If the beat makes you shake a shoulder and get up and dance, it doesn't really matter what the artist is saying.
And then can you chat shit, basically?
Because if you listen to Afrobeats, they're not saying nothing. On any of these tracks, I promise you, they're not talking about nothing. But it sounds good. It gets the people going. Mm. Where to Jay and Kanye. But with Burner, he's always had content and then the musicality as well, like using certain instruments and, you know, just everything just seems so purposeful and so intentional with his music. So I guess, yeah, his musical style for me is what sets him apart. So although I didn't see Afrobeats kind of growing in the way it has grown, Burner was always at the top of it. And I think as it's grown, he's continued to be at the top of it, which is not a surprise for me. But yeah, I guess speaking about his musical style then, are there any, I guess, elements of his musical style that you enjoy or any songs that kind of you think are, they kind of highlight his musical style? It could be past, it could be present.
I think it's very obvious, but I think the way he has that perfect balance between the Nigerian sound, the command of Yoruba that he has, he's fluent.
Yeah.
And mixing in like the island sound and like making it relevant as well, and it's just so flawless to me. And I feel like that style is something that he completely reigns, and like no one else can, I don't feel like anyone can touch.
I feel you. And I guess him in the pocket he sits in, I guess, is highlighted by two songs he's dropped in particular recently. And I feel like recently he's been on such a mad run. I feel like the last six or seven songs he's dropped have all been super, super, super. But more recently, I guess Killing Them, with an artist called Zlatan, is very much like that kind of the essence of Afrobeats. It's the beat driven and like it's, you know, it's going to make you get up and
dance. He can do it all, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. But then he'll also drop songs like Dangote, which he's most recently dropped. I feel like that song is spiritual.
It
like,
is, it is.
And what he's saying as well, like it's like, it's very pertinent to Africans and where they are at now. Like, it's, I guess, unfortunately, a continent, and Nigeria specifically, a country that is ridden with poverty, right? And out of that poverty is born this beautiful music about, you know, these people are making money, when will my own money fall? You can see me struggling, like, when will I kind of reach that kind of level? And even in the music video as well, it portrays that really, really well. So for him to go from songs like Killing Them to Dangote, like,
We Do as well.
Where do they enter? Like,
he's basically, this series is us like fanboying and fangirling on our favorite artists, if you haven't gathered.
Basically, with Dangote, and you know how we spoke about his uncle being Fela's tour manager and his mom being a dancer for Fela? You can also hear it in his music, the influences of Fela.
Absolutely,
you know, in the saxophone and even his ad-libs as well, and like his kind of the backing vocals he puts on his his tracks. You can really hear it in Dangote and
I feel like he's the only Nigerian artist or even African artist that has the utmost respect for Fela and his legacy.
And pays homage in his music.
In his music.
Honestly. All of them say, oh, Fela's the greatest. Oh, yeah, he's the number one. He's a forefather of this Afrobeat stuff. But their music is kind of far removed. Not saying that they have to make music like Fela, but you wouldn't know that they're influenced by him by just listening to his to their music. But then when you listen to Burner, you can hear it, you know, in his tone sometimes, in what he says and how he says it, in the instruments. You can tell this guy, Fela was his idol. And I enjoy Fela's music. So for me, it sounds really good. And that's, again, testament to his musicality that we were talking about earlier.
Exactly.
And then he'll come with tunes like, I guess, On The Low, which is like in the middle of all of that stuff, in the middle of Killing Them and Dangote. Like, it's
like a more romantic side to hit to him, and but obviously we still get the flavor, we still get the beat that we love to hear Burner
Speaking
on.
Speaking of romantic, what do you make of his relationship with Steph?
Auntie I mean, Stephanie? He can do what he wants. Do you know what I mean?
Do you reckon it's kind of not dimming his light, but it's messing with his image a bit? Him, I guess, being with her.
Funnily enough, not really, because I mean, yes, they've put up the like pictures and we've seen pictures, but if anything, it makes, I don't know if you caught that tweet where, like, in the initial stages where everyone was speculating, are they together, are they not, and Berna basically said something that confirmed it.
Yeah.
And then Steph just... Oh, she's so
he's
stupid.
Like, oh, I ain't let him hit you or something.
Yeah, he was like oh, yeah, on, we're together, guys, but I ain't let him hit yet. And it just... That just made her look so stupid.
Oh,
and
man.
So if anything, she's, you know, making herself look like, you know, whatever. Weird. Yeah, in the whole scenario. And Berna's just there. You know, he can do what he likes. She can do what she likes, but... Like I mean, if they are together, that's all nice.
It's nice for them, but...
That's all nice and that.
I don't really like the look of it. Aesthetically and just, like, putting the names together, I wouldn't have necessarily thought they had much in common or much they could...
I mean...
vibe about. But listen, love comes in different forms, right? Who are we to kind of say who should and shouldn't be together? But it's just because you said, you know, romance or whatever. So I just thought, oh, right, he's with Steph London, isn't he?
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a bit of a tangent. But yeah, no, are there any other, I guess, any other songs he's released recently that you've been really feeling or like what you've been...
I said Bedu, didn't I? It's actually Bono. Bono, that's the name of the song. Yeah. That was on spin for like... weeks. Maybe. I love that song.
The sax in it as well. Yeah. Very fella, that sax as well.
Yes, very.
Even the ad-libs, diggy, 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 diggy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very, very fella. Like, very fella. I guess I've also been listening to, have you heard Rock Your Body?
Yes.
It's another
Rock
like...
Rock Your Body. Yeah.
He does really well with this kind of down-tempo Afro beats. Like, a lot of artists, when they come down a lot of Afrobeats artists, when they come down a tempo, I think they tend to struggle when it's not like party tunes or
just
not necessarily wedding songs.
Do.
They don't really, they can't really, you know, navigate that.
Mm.
But Berna does really well, I guess, right from tonight with his first song. Like he, that space, I guess he's the only one who can really occupy that in Afrobeats, like that really down tempo, almost liquid Afrobeats, real chill kind of vibe. But yeah,
something you'd listen to at a day party.
Exactly. And then that as well as Hallelujah as well. Have you heard Hallelujah?
Yeah, and that feels like a prayer. It's so beautiful.
It's almost gospel like.
Yeah.
I feel you.
When he goes into I thank God for my and he just keeps going on. It's so beautiful.
I did thank God for my mommy.
Yeah. I remember playing that at one point. I think I don't know, I had secured something which was, you know, good for me. And then I just played that on repeat and it was such a nice experience.
I should praise and worship there. Definitely. I also, I agree. The song's very kind of uplifting and makes you feel light. And that. I mean, just the songs that we've described, we've picked up 3 or 4 songs and they've all been different vibes.
Mm-hmm.
And they've all been really good songs.
Yep.
I feel like we've kind of missed out a particular song.
I think arguably the best song of 2018, period.
Yeah, no, I think it was one of the, if not the biggest song to come out of Africa last year. Mm-hmm. And that song,
and that just put him on a map in a whole different way.
Yeah, like in fact, I think okay, let's say what the song is. The song is Ye.
Yeah.
But I think I remember the song came out around the time Kanye West dropped his albums. You know, in June,
it was
he dropped all of
a bit before that.
And I remember he must have tweeted like, I think people were looking for Kanye's album because it's called Ye, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're looking for Kanye's album and then they ended up coming to
Burna Boy's song.
I think his streams went up
and
by like 2,000%.
Eventually
crazy.
His album and then just him as an artist,
you know,
which was great.
I slightly think that's what kind of birthed his kind of blowing. With being tied to that. And then I think it gave people, because he was tied to that, that was the entry point. But then because of his catalogue, it kept people there.
Mm.
They're like, oh, let's listen to this guy. He's put out a song called Ye, but he ain't Kanye. Who does he think he is?
And all of a sudden, he was getting all these co-signs from like American artists, like people like Mick Jenkins and all the
I saw that too.
Yeah,
I was like, I don't know who this Burna Boy is, but his music
is fire.
Yeah. And that's someone from a completely different world to Burna Boy as well. So for him to appreciate it, I think Mick Jenkins even mentioned that he went back and said that everything he's put out is fire.
He's really
like,
enjoyed,
you know? That made me really happy. I can't lie, because Mick Jenkins, I'm a big fan of his for something completely different and what he offers. But to see that was really cool. But Song of the Year 2018.
Yeah, absolutely.
Spiritual. Spiritual.
I mean, what else can we say? But that song is just, every time it comes on, I just rise. Do you know what I mean? I just rise.
I feel you. It's one of those ones. Even whatever setting you hear, you can hear it in a, it's not a rave song, but if you hear it in a rave.
Exactly. And I feel like the last experience where I heard it, you know, in like a bigger setting was at a wedding.
Yeah.
And
imagine how that went off.
The way I just came out my chair. It felt exactly as you mentioned, spiritual.
Honestly, man, I feel that song differently. I connected it differently.
Hmm.
I remember we had an episode actually one time we were speaking about the song and we spoke about the video. We weren't big fans of the video, but it doesn't seem like the video kind of held the song back and kind of...
It didn't. I mean, I would say watching the video along with the song is a different experience.
Yeah.
I just... music videos are important, right? So the visuals, as you're hearing the song, it kind of, I wouldn't say holds it back, but when I'm seeing girls and cars, it's just not, you know, it doesn't, the two don't marry well together. Yeah. And fair enough. I mean, there is talk of, like, you know, Range and the Bentley and, you know, the cars he's mentioning and stuff. But yeah, the video for me was just...
Yeah. No, I definitely agree.
Could have been better directed, but hey.
I think it's because of the rush. I don't think he expected Ye to blow the way it blew, and he needed ASAP. So he was like, "Listen, let me just get this out, wherever it is, get it out." I don't think he was where he wanted to be. I don't think he recorded it in Africa or anything like that. I think he must have recorded it in America or even in the UK.
Fair point, actually, because then that would have hugely influenced what he was able to do.
Yeah,
the resources he had and the time that he had. So. Yeah, that's a good point.
I definitely agree. And I think his most recent video for Dangote, I think the video for Ye would have probably been along those lines if he kind of had taken the time to think about it and process it in the way he wanted to. Mm. But again, like you said, it didn't hold the song back in any way, shape or form. Any other thoughts on, I guess, Burna's songs or...
What else can we say that we haven't already mentioned?
So, I was going to talk about any project. I think we spoke about Life.
Yeah.
Speak about his most recent one.
Actually, I felt to mention there was a period where, shortly before like the whole Ye blow up, there was a period where you could see that he was really trying to pander to the like European market and, you know, just, I wouldn't say doing the most, because he is a very authentic artist that I don't feel like he wants to do too much to go out of character.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you heard Streets of Africa. And then there was another song where it featured Lily Allen. And this was last year, actually. This all happened last year, like around this time, April, March sort of time. And I thought, Burna Boy, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because Streets of Africa was just, it was nothing like what I expected from Burna Boy. And I think that is, I wouldn't say it was a disappointing moment. It was just like, okay, I see what you're trying to do here, Burna, but it's not quite you.
Yeah.
And you don't really need to pander to, you know, I don't know whether it's the American or just wider European market that he was trying to like cater to, but...
Mm-hmm.
It didn't gel well with me, and it's not a song of Burna's that sticks out at all. And what's the song with Lily Allen?
I think they did two songs, actually. They did a song for on his tape, Outside, and they did a song for her. One of his was called Heaven's Gate.
Heaven's Gate, that's it. That's what I'm thinking of.
I think they shot a video for that as well. Yeah. Funny enough, the song that they did together on Lily Allen's album, which came out, I think, a month before, a month after, was actually really good. Like, it was quite cool.
What's it called? I've not heard it.
Your Choice, Not Mine, I think it's called that.
Okay.
It's called Your Choice. But
I didn't
know
there was a second song.
Yeah, they did. I think they were just in the studio together for a while, and I think they came up with three or four songs.
To be fair, how that whole collaboration would have come about, I'm not surprised by, because Burna has an awareness of Britain and like the market and who's good, and I'm sure he has this like connects and contacts or whatever. So that whole collaboration is fine to me. It's just Heaven's Gate for me just
didn't work.
It just didn't work.
I guess, speaking of artists that he collaborated with that, you know, in terms of it working, the actual intro, so we're talking about Outside now, his most recent project, the actual intro to that called More Life, apparently I heard it was meant to be on Drake's More Life, and it got taken off. So just before this album dropped, or maybe just after, he did some interviews about it. And he was like, I did a song with Drake, but just it never made More Life. And he said it was really, really good. So I guess if you guys listen back, the intro track called More Life was actually meant to be on More Life, and it was meant to have a Drake verse on it. Obviously, he took the Drake verse off when Drake said he wasn't going to use it. But yeah, imagine that. What a Drake and a Burna Boy.
Of all the artists that Drake chucked on More Life, why did he snub? He
really should have kept Burna on there. He snubbed
Burna Boy.
I know.
Well,
I know.
Mean, that's just another reason why I don't like More Life.
Hey. Do you know, I actually quite like it, you know. I think it's one of Drake's better projects. Weirdly.
Really?
Yeah. And do you know, I actually went back
we
and looked at...
We didn't say this before. Have we discussed this before?
Nah, because it came out in 16, 17.
Yeah,
I think it came out before we started recording.
Yeah, I think
what came out when
we
were recording was the song Episode 2 got ripped.
Yeah, we did rip it because we were going to talk about Scorpion.
Yeah, we already said it, but yeah, we'll redact that word you just said. We can get a bleep sound. We don't fuck with Universal. No, I'm joking. So I don't know, come and scrap our whole point. No, I'm joking. I think a Drake and a Burna collaboration, if they ever do one again, I think that would be good. Like, I feel like their musicality could...
It would work, you know. I feel like it would. Yeah.
I think it would. Even if you just listen to More Life, I mean... Burna Boy's song called More Life. You could probably see with the pockets that Drake would probably have sat in. Even on that same tape as well, I guess apart from Heaven's Gate probably not being one of the better tracks, the tape he had a song called Settle Down On with Jay Huss.
I love that.
Yeah,
I know it's very like chill vibey, but I feel like it's spiritual for me.
I feel you.
That vibe, as soon as I hear that, it's like, come on.
Yeah, I'm with you completely there. That's probably one of the standout tracks for me as well.
Yeah,
And
Jay Huss, of course.
Of course, doing what Jay Huss does. And then I think Rock Your Body was on there as well. A song called Calm Down, which was, again, produced by J5, which was really good. Gidem was really good as well. Kuni Baje was good as well.
This album was one of the best Nigerian albums.
Genuinely, as an album.
In fact, I think it was the number one. And if I'm just thinking of like the Nigerian scene in particular. So, of course, like people like Odunsi was like, his album was critically acclaimed, but I feel like Outside was just number one.
Yeah, no, yeah. I strongly believe so. I think I even tweeted around the time that this album is really, really good. Mm. Like, you know, before it got the traction it got. I agree. As an album, not just because I'm even trying to slate the Afrobeats genre, because I enjoy it and I like it.
Yeah.
But it's very single driven. You don't really like. Oh, now, you know, Davido ain't released an album. Oh, now. Hella singles. From Dammy Duro to now, what album has he dropped?
Oh, okay. So he.
Have you seen that video of him when he's trying to freestyle? And he goes. That was powerful.
That was not even intentional.
Oh man, apparently he's gonna be on Nick Cannon's Wilding Out as well. Listen, by the time they roast him, he does for them. Boy.
Oh, I couldn't have timed that better. But yeah, Davido is another story, because there was a time he was also trying to do the whole American artist and he signed to Sony.
Yeah, it was Sony.
And he did put out this, I wouldn't even call it an album, but it was definitely a project of like 6-7 songs.
Like an EP kind of.
Yeah, so he's put out, you know, bodies of work.
Yeah.
And he's kept very quiet about it because I feel like he's almost ashamed of the content that was on that thing, because
I think I watched an interview and he was talking about the time where he got signed, and he was based in America when he was making that music, and they had him in the studio with all types of artists like Meek Mill and all these rappers and that.
Mm.
And he said he put the album out, or whatever the tape was, and he said as soon as it came out, he was like, listen, I'm going straight back to Africa, man. Like,
yeah.
I'm not in the right environment to be making the music I'm trying to make.
And it really did show through, like, because they must have chucked, you know, everyone at him, because there was, I think even, was it, who was it? Ty Dolla $ign. There was, he worked with huge American artists,
the Premier
can't
ones.
Really remember off the top of my head, but they were all featured on like some of his songs, and it didn't hit.
Saying that, I saw on Twitter the other day, it was like a mini clip, maybe a minute, and maybe we can play it because it's not an actual label song. It was him and Timbaland. They were in the studio. And it sounded really good. Like, it was like chill. Like, it was really cool. So I'm probably looking forward to hearing that.
But that's the thing with Davido. When, like, because this is what happened with...
Wiz?
That whole... I don't even know the name of the song. That's how irrelevant it is. But when he released that snippet video of him sampling Akon locked up, and everyone went crazy. Was like, drop this now.
I really like it.
And he just didn't deliver because it was essentially what we heard in that snippet elongated into like a 3-minute song, and it just it didn't hit. He's very one trick pony. David O.
No, I feel. Well, he still makes good music though. Like any wedding you go to, let a David O song drop for you, and then you'll see David O's loved.
Yeah, I mean, he's just very. I feel like his money's got him further than
his talent.
Yeah.
When you compare him to Wizkid and Burner, probably.
Yeah.
But he can still make good music at the end of the day, right? But
yeah, but just very, like I said, just musical. Very single-sided. Yeah.
I feel you. And why were we even talking about David O? I feel like we segued into him for a reason, because we're talking about something to do with Burner.
Yeah,
Outside project was... Oh, actually, I had a question I wanted to ask you. It's like in terms of like collaborating and I guess Burna Boy's musical style, I think we discussed how musical he is and that's why he's good at what he does. And I know you're a big fan of the, I think, is it called the Altair scene?
Yeah.
Where do you see him, like, in terms of collaborate? Like, do you reckon he'll be able to make a collaboration and would it sound good? Like,
saucy question. Mm. So,
as an Altair expert.
Funnily enough, I haven't seen anyone, any of the artists within the whole like Altair scene, even approach Burna per se, in terms of whether they want him to feature on a song. I feel like he's so like far removed from that, not in terms of the style and of the music, but just he doesn't really want to
really
associate with, like, I have to tread carefully because I'm not really aware of how he moves in Nigeria. He's very in and out of Nigeria. Yeah. Like, he goes there, like, he records, like, he just keeps to himself.
Yeah.
And he's kind of untouchable. So, in terms of collaborating with an Altair artist, it would probably come from his side. Like, he would probably be doing the approaching and say, hey, I want to approach with you. And he would handpick very carefully
who he would. Purposeful as well.
Because, I mean, there are many great artists that, you know, are doing well in their own right. But Burna, I imagine he would be very picky and he wouldn't just go for anyone, you know.
Yeah.
And there isn't anyone that I can think of that he would even dream of collaborating at the moment. I mean, there is someone called...
Think about it.
No, probably not.
It's not even your Adunsis and your... Santi's and them, like this musically may not.
Santi's an interesting one because I feel like Santi is someone who's really carving his own lane and he's going to become untouchable. Right now I think at the moment he's almost untouchable within his space.
Yeah.
In that he's very careful with his output. He doesn't do the whole lifestyle and he just focuses on the music and even his features are well crafted and well thought out. I feel like he's in a similar sort of vein in that if he were to collaborate with someone like Burna Boy,
cheapen his image.
Not cheapen his image. It would really work.
Okay.
Because Santi has that whole island sound to him as well.
Mm.
Like he does it really well.
Had that Sparky joint. Mm. Right. That's by him, right? Sparky.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you've listened to more of his music, like I've suggested you should.
Drips and drabs, but I couldn't really get into it. I couldn't.
He's like, I think I mentioned it a few episodes ago. If there's any of the artists that you would pay attention to, it's Santi, because he's on a similar trajectory in that it will be untouchable compared to a lot of these Altair artists.
Mm.
And
he's the one that's going to transcend the genre.
Yeah. I think he's already doing that in ways that people are noticing, but they're not really... They're like, yeah, cool, do your thing.
Do your thing over there.
But let's see where he is in a couple of years' time. Fair. Yeah, that was a very long-winded answer. But I'm going to give more thought to that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the moment, Burna Boy wouldn't really be looking to the Altair scene. Because I feel like he is his own alternative.
He is a genre.
Yeah.
In itself, yeah. He is a genre. That's why he's African jam, man. People thought he was joking when he said it.
What did you actually think of his response?
I was like, you're getting gassed. Is it because Ye blew up that now all of a sudden? I was like, you need to chill out. There's some big, big names on the bill, you know. Coachella's not a local man festival.
Yes.
Saying,
like...
It's the context in which he did it in as well.
It was so trivial. Like, the size of the font.
It's such a Nigerian thing.
Yeah,
though,
like the ego.
Sometimes it really gets in the way. That pride thing is it's a bit mad. Yeah.
And I mean, I had a debate with like people on my Twitter, like, you know, music people, and they were like, no, he has every right to call it, you know, Coachella out, because he shouldn't be on some happy to be here bullshit. He needs to command that. Yeah,
he shouldn't, but like over something
which
so trivial, like,
yeah,
like,
it was.
He shouldn't be on some happy to be here bullshit, which means that maybe in how much they pay him, he demands he gets paid a certain
amount.
Yeah,
but it wasn't that.
But in terms of how big the font is with your name, that's not the hill you want to die on. Like, as long as they pay you as if they respect you, it doesn't matter how big your name is, because those who are fans of you that want to come and see you, they'll see your name there. No matter how... Listen, we all saw his name before we made fun of the font size. I saw his name there.
2018 Coachella was the year that they bought a... It was the first year that a black woman headlined, which was Beyonce. Mm. So 2019 Coachella, you should be... I don't want to say happy to be even considered, but like... You need to understand that within the year that you've really blown up globally, like, that's a huge achievement, and you should be not happy to be there, but like happy that you have escalated so fast and you're doing amazingly well, you know?
Definitely. So, it was just on some real Nigerian shit, man. That's what I was like, what are you doing? I got why he was doing it, but I was like, this
all
is
the
dumb.
People that were agreeing with him were men. So
it's Nigerian man thing. Nigerian man thing.
Yeah.
No. It was funny though. I was looking at him like, you better come there and perform. Not like Wizkid that went there and his band didn't make it. They didn't have a visa and so he didn't perform. Or at least he performed. Did you see his performance? I think you mentioned that you hadn't seen his performance. I saw a snippet of it, like a 40-second snippet of when he performed Killing Them.
Okay.
It was actually really good. But the thing is, Burner, like, although I didn't watch the full Coachella thing, I watched on YouTube. I watched when he came to, was it the Brixton Academy in London?
Yeah, the O2 show that he sold out.
Listen, that guy on stage, his music is good, but
his
stage presence and the way he performs is just as good. Like, he can perform, and he's got energy, and he knows how to command the crowd as well. And he knows with the songs that he's singing, he knows how to kind of give the energy of the song in his performance. That's something I really like about him as well. He's a really good live performer. Not that he'll be out of breath after, you know, some... I feel like I'm slating Afrobeats, but some Afrobeats artists, like... They'll be breathing heavy on the mic after doing one song, and like it just ain't a good look, man. If there's anything for like, you know, that drummer to polish up on, it's like, all right, cool, the songs are great, but when it comes to performing the songs, it has to be just as great, man, because the songs that make it requires a good performance.
That just brings to mind Afro Nation.
You going?
I mean, no, sorry. I mean, what's the one where like they brought out Tiwa, Wizkid, the artists?
Afrofest?
Afrofusion?
I was there as well, imagine.
What, you went?
I think it was Afrofest. Yeah, the one at the O2, right?
Yeah.
I was there.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
No.
What do you mean, am I sure?
No,
I was there.
Not are you sure you were there? Are you sure it's called Afrofest?
Oh, I don't know.
I think, anyway, that one.
Whatever, man.
Like, okay, so you were there, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel like the performances were? Because I watched a bit of the live show and I tuned in at exactly the time Techno was on stage.
Do you know what, yeah, with Techno, I could see he was a good performer, but the crowd were not giving him the energy. They were like, come and play Pana and then dip. We don't want to hear this other shit. Like, they didn't really know his songs. I think he left the stage earlier as well. So you can tell.
I saw, like, not only he was in, like, jeans or something.
White jeans.
And
white jeans.
He was just, like, jumping.
Yeah. The crowd were not giving him any energy. They weren't having it, man.
I feel like was it just him on stage as well?
It was. So it was very lonely. So I think. That's but you could tell if it was in his element and people were giving him the energy. You could tell he probably would have been a good performer, to be fair to him.
But he needed more. Because, like, he's a unique one in terms of he produces and he... also like
a very
sings.
Good producer
and he's probably more well known for the producing, so people need to put respect on his name,
definitely.
But so in terms of a performance, like, he probably needed more
and I'll tell you who had more at that same Afro Fest. No, I'm gonna call it Afrofest. I think it was
Afro. I feel like it was Afro Nation, but hey.
No, Afro Nation is the festival that's coming up in August.
Well, that's confusing.
It's probably the same. It's not the same people, but yeah, no. I'll tell you whose production was really, really good that impressed me. So, right, so take it from the beginning. Someone's performance that really impressed me was, which is really bad because I can't remember his name. He's also a UK-born Afrobeats artist, Malik Berry.
Malik Berry, yeah.
He can perform. Mm. And his songs are really good as well.
Yes.
I know he's a really good producer. He performed The Matter with Wizkid. Yeah, baby, what's the matter? Open and close, all that stuff. So I knew he was a good producer, but he's actually a really good artist as well. And when he performed, I was like, bruh, like, he's actually really good. And then Young Bane was cool, did his thing, good stage presence as well. He's a good performer, but I wouldn't say he's an Afrobeats artist. But then who really impressed me? Huh?
Not at all, to be honest.
Nah. Who really impressed me was Mr. Easy. And a lot of people are like, yeah. Mr. Easy, I don't really like his songs. They're not as up-tempo, they're quite down-tempo. But his production was first class. Mm. He had a whole band, he had dancers as well that came out in different costumes as well. Like, it was really, really, really good. He had the back kind of TV board, like, you know, each song that he performed, it was like different backing, whatever. Like, the production was so, so, so good. And he could perform as well. But I think that's because he was one of the few artists on the bill that were like, was really heavily label backed. So that's probably why. And he brought out gigs as well, actually. It was when London Town first came out.
So
he brought out gigs to perform, which was cool. We never expected that. Mm. But yeah, and then obviously Uncle Wiz came out at the end. It did an alright performance, but I think I probably would have preferred going to his Royal Albert Hall one, where it was just him. But saying that, Burner Boy probably should have been on that bill. They snoozed on that one still. But him being the African giant he is, he probably didn't want to come on after Wizkid. He probably thought, oh, wait, I'm just as big as him. Like, we're co-headlining, or I'm going on last or something like that. It would probably been that kind of drama. Yeah. Burner Boy's performance at his O2, his Brixton show, I thought was really good.
Yeah. I can't believe I dolled for that show. I remember when it first was announced.
I remember you on the TL alongside me trying to find tickets.
Yes. So when they first announced the show, I was like, yep, I'll be there. I'll buy tickets when I can. But then a bit later on, I was like, I'll catch him later. Mm. And then 1 week, days before the show, I was frantically trying to
frantic was the word. I think it's because we underestimated how many other people liked him. Do you know what? It's not even how many other people liked him. People just went for one song. They wanted to hear Ye. That's what annoyed me.
Yeah.
Because as he did his performance, I watched the whole thing live. And his first half of his set was probably his more recent stuff, some of the stuff from outside the album. And you can tell a lot of people were just like, I don't really know these tracks. Mm. Like, I'm not really. And then the second half is what he did tonight, like to party, all them joints where people kind of knew. And obviously everyone came for him to perform Ye.
Yeah.
So what really upset me, but it got me salty, was the fact that people only really bought tickets so they could hear that one
song.
People
that wouldn't have enjoyed it start to finish.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And I was sitting at home stewing on YouTube in my bed, just watching it like an idiot. But next time he's around, I'm going to be there, definitely. Saying that, he just shut down a New York show, actually, and he brought out Dave as a special guest. Have you heard his collab with Dave?
Location, yeah.
It went silver the other day, actually.
Ooh,
still numbers.
Yeah, I saw that,
still
actually.
Numbers,
yes.
Yeah. That's another really good collaboration, I think. There's a perfect marriage between the two of them. Mm-hmm. It's going to be one of the songs of the summer.
Mm.
I just hope he can continue this run, like, of songs that he's on now, man, and lead up to another album. I think he probably will drop an album this year at the tail end.
I believe his quality will be consistent for years to come. Whether he takes quiet periods or he gives us back-to-back bangers, we can just expect Burna Boy to be Burna Boy.
Yeah, word. I feel you. Yeah, man.
I do think at some point he will, have a quiet moment. He'll have a hiatus.
He's afforded that luxury.
Yeah,
some artists can't go away for a long time and then be popping when they come back. I feel like he could go away for a minute and then he'll be anticipated when he does return.
Yes.
But yeah, I guess that's Burna Boy. Any other thoughts on that?
I mean, I feel like we've covered Burna Boy to the extent we can. We've gone on tangents about Davido and
I was about to introduce another tangent quickly, and I probably will do, but let's close on Burna before.
Yeah. So I guess that is this episode on Burna Boy. I feel like it was a very enjoyable first episode for our Artist Spotlight series. Do let us know what you think on our socials. We'll try to be better on social media, but we've both got full-time jobs and it's not the most easy thing to do. But yeah, we'll try and give this a good push and let us know what you think and your thoughts on Burna Boy. Do you love him? What do you think about him in general?
Yeah, don't forget to use the hashtag WeLitPod.
Of course, as always.
We'll respond, we'll engage with you.
Yep, until next time then.
All right, man. See you later.
Yeah. Were you going to say something?
I was going to ask, I was going to say, you know...